Ask not what your finances will do to you in 2023. Ask what you will do with your finances. Hi, I'm Rob West. Okay, that's a play on a famous JFK quote, but I think it describes the need to take a proactive role with your finances in the new year coming up. Mark Biller joins us today to tell us how to do that. We're off, so please hold your phone calls. This is MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Well, our friend Mark Biller is executive editor at Sound Mind Investing, where they've been busy coming up with their annual list of financial moves you can make in the new year. Mark, great to have you back on the program.
Thanks, Rob. Good to be back with you.
Mark, this is a great resource that you all post every year to help folks improve their financial picture. It's titled, of course, Your 10 Most Important Financial Moves for 2023, and folks can access it at soundmindinvesting.org. But it's not just a list of 10 things, is it?
No, it's really a roundup of planning suggestions for the year ahead. And rather than providing a one-size-fits-all kind of list, instead, we go ahead and serve up a broad range of ideas, and the idea there really is for the reader then to go through that list and pick their own personal top 10.
Yeah.
And that, you know, will come from the 70 or so suggestions that we discuss in that article, but it makes it very tailored to each individual. And we've found over the years that people who are willing to do that and go through that exercise and then follow through on those specific items, really, it helps them become a better steward of their resources and helps them move closer to their long-term goals.
Yeah, that's helpful. All right, well, you had these suggestions broken down into several categories, so let's go over them, and perhaps you can give us an idea of what to expect in each. Mark, let's start with spiritual and financial fundamentals.
Yeah, sounds good. And as we dive in, I should also note that there are links to additional articles and resources for each one of these suggestions on the SMI website. So if listeners hear something that they want more information on or they want to dig deeper on a particular topic, that's the best way to do it.
Great.
So diving right in, Rob, here are a few of the spiritual and financial fundamentals on the list. First and foremost, we've got acknowledge God as the Lord of your finances. Mm. And that's really the starting point of Christian stewardship and an important ongoing aspect of a deepening relationship with Christ. Second, in that section, we've got make a plan for your financial journey. You know, on these programs together, we frequently discuss the need to develop a biblically sound, personalized money management strategy that will inform your spending, your saving, your investing, and your generosity. And then a third one from that section, Rob, is to resist financial temptations. You know, handling money well takes more than just learning the rules of good financial management. You've also got to practice and develop self-control. Now, thankfully, self-control is a fruit of the Holy Spirit. Yeah. So as we draw closer to the Lord, that fruit should become increasingly manifest in our lives.
Yeah, that's really helpful, Mark, and a great place to start. All right, the next category of financial moves is strengthening your financial foundation. What do you have for us there?
Yeah, so this section is all about making sure that that foundation is fully in place. And if it isn't, this really is the place for people to concentrate their efforts in the year ahead. So a few suggestions here. First, take advantage of the world's most effective personal finance tool, and that is a budget.
Yeah.
Now, that may be unpopular,
sure,
but a well-planned and well-executed budget really is the single best tool available for effective money management. Now, one new one to the list this year is to comparison shop for higher interest rates on your savings. Over this last year, interest rates have moved from near zero a year ago to the 4%+ range today. So moving your money to a savings account, maybe at an online bank, can meaningfully move the needle on the amount of interest a person can earn. And then kind of in that same vein, we've talked a number of times over the last year about putting some of your savings in U.S. government I-bonds. I-bonds are paying inflation-adjusted rates that are well above most other bonds and other savings options. Now, they do have some restrictions, but very attractive in the right circumstances.
Mark Biller's with us today. We're talking about their annual list of financial moves for 2023. Much more to come just around the corner. Stick around. Thanks for joining us on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Joining me today, my friend Mark Biller, executive editor at Sound Mind Investing. You can learn more at soundmindinvesting.org. What if you had a top 10 list that was uniquely for you and your financial situation to make important moves for 2023 and really shore up your financial foundation and your role as a steward? Well, that's what Sound Mind Investing has made available. From 70 or more suggestions, you can handpick your top 10 financial moves for 2023 in some key categories. Just before the break, we talked about category one, spiritual and financial fundamentals. The second one we talked about was strengthening your financial foundation. Mark, the third category is developing an investing plan. What do you have for us there?
Yeah, no surprise. We've got a lot in this section. We've got 26 different suggestions in this area.
Wow.
But the most important big idea here is Scripture encourages us to prepare for the needs of tomorrow without becoming hoarders. So all of these suggestions can help you invest as a faithful steward who acts with prudence and wisdom. So the first idea in this section is to identify obstacles that are holding you back from saving for retirement and start moving those out of the way. So some common roadblocks would be auto loans, expensive housing, generally poor money management. But honestly, Rob, often the biggest obstacle is just not having a financial plan or any measurable goals.
Yeah.
And that's really the whole point of this top 10 list idea, is to identify some of these key goals and then get to work. So the second idea in this section would be to get familiar with the foundational biblical precepts related to investing. The Bible offers lots of timeless principles related to investing and managing our wealth. And by studying those and allowing those to become part of your thinking, you'll begin to be able to apply those ideas to the investing decisions that you face. Last one from this group is an SMI hallmark, and that's to become a better investor by using an inside-out approach. Now, Rob, you and I did a whole program on this a couple months ago.
Yeah.
So listeners may want to dig that one out of the archives for more information. But the big idea here is to make investment decisions based on your personal inside-out needs rather than on the outside-in expert opinions and market news.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And then, Mark, as we build on this investing topic, I know you all have an entire section just on broadening your portfolio. What would you have our listeners know there?
Yeah, so this section is more for those who are becoming an experienced investor, and they're looking to broaden their portfolio either to reduce risk or take advantage of market conditions. So a few examples from this section would be learning about investments beyond stocks and bonds. You know, we just had the worst year for a traditional 60-40 stock bond portfolio in about the last five decades. Now, fortunately, there are some other options available, and learning about things like commodities, real estate, gold, just to name a few, that can really help add some additional diversification to a core portfolio. Now, on a similar note, learning about some easy ways to hedge market downside may be worthwhile for some folks. SMI has discussed several of those techniques and products this year. And then a final one would be, you know, you might have to grapple with this whether or not you go through our list, but it's to understand some of the new investment options that are coming to a lot of employer-based retirement accounts. Now, I have to warn you, not all of these are necessarily good options. So it's really important to be informed about some of this new stuff coming down the pike.
Yeah, that's exactly right. This is really helpful, Mark. Now, of course, no top 10 list in terms of financial moves would be complete without thinking about retirement. And I know looking toward retirement is our next category.
Yeah, and this section has ideas like taking advantage of the current bear market in stocks to convert traditional IRA money to a Roth IRA. You know, with investment account values down a lot this year for some people, it can be an attractive time to consider a traditional to Roth conversion so that you can have more tax-free income down the road in retirement. Now, another example from this section would be assessing how much money you'll need to maintain your standard of living in retirement. We've got some helpful pointers on how to do that, how to look at that whole situation for those that have that life transition on the horizon.
Yeah, great. Mark, you, of course, have a ton of suggestions in, let's call it your miscellaneous section. It covers children and college and insurance and a whole lot more. So I want folks to check that out when they read this article at soundmindinvesting.org. But I'd like to skip to what you call the most important section of all. What is it?
Yeah, that's your relationship with God, Rob. There's just no substitute here for this one. And first and foremost, the way that you improve that relationship with the Lord is to invest time in it. You know, the most important goal of a Christian steward is to know Jesus. He's the one who is the pearl of great price. Yeah. And valuing your relationship and your communion with Him above your wealth and investments is really a key cornerstone to keeping all this financial stuff in perspective. And then one last parting thought as we kind of wrap up what's been a tough financial year for a lot of people. I would just say that if we trust in Jesus and bring our concerns to Him, Christ will deliver us through the difficulties of life. You know, we can live in hope because we serve a God who's too strong to lose control of any situation. He's too wise to make mistakes, and He's too loving to ever abandon us.
Well, what a great reminder for us today. Mark, as we head into this new year, of course, learning and growing in our understanding of biblical stewardship is so key. And I've been so encouraged over the years through my own subscription to the SMI newsletter. I'd love for you just to share with our listeners quickly what that is and what they would get if they signed up.
Yeah. Well, the newsletter membership, we have an actual physical newsletter that goes out every month. And then we also have an online membership where we're writing content constantly throughout the month. What we're trying to do is both educate folks. So we have a lot of folks who come in maybe not knowing a whole lot about investing. And then we've got folks all the way at the other end of the spectrum who know quite a bit about investing. But for all those folks, we're trying to educate, help people understand the investing world and landscape. And then on top of that, we're putting together very practical, tangible counsel on what they need to do in their own portfolios so they can follow along with us with our model portfolios.
Excellent. And it's written by a team of writers, including Mark Biller, that really all want to bring you godly and biblical counsel so you can be a wise steward of your resources. Well, Mark, thanks for stopping by today with some great ideas for improving our finances in 2023. Mark, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, Rob. Always my pleasure.
That's Mark Biller, executive editor at Sound Mind Investing. We really just scratched the surface on what's in their terrific article, Your 10 Most Important Financial Moves for 2023. You can read the full article at soundmindinvesting.org. As I said, we're off today, so don't call in, but we've got some great calls lined up in advance. I'm Rob West, and we'll be right back. Thrilled to have you along today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Let's head back to the questions to Miami Springs, Florida. Hey, Carlos, thanks for calling. How can I help you, sir?
Thank you. Anyways, my question is very brief. All my beneficiaries, unfortunately, they passed because they were older than me. My family, they lived to be a long time. So now I'm in the... dilemma that I don't know who to leave, you know.
Yes.
My whatever to. So.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, there's only three places you can leave your estate, your personal effects and assets. You can either leave it to heirs, you can leave it to charity or ministry, or to the government. Now, the good news is the government shouldn't get any of it, because unless you have a massive estate, you would likely not have any kind of taxes on it. So you just have to decide, is there individuals, family members or others that you want to leave this to? And if not, you know, what an opportunity to give, really, to support the Lord's work, either at your local church or your church plus other ministries that are on your heart, that you're passionate about. What would you guess, Carlos, at your passing, you would have in the way of a total estate? What would the value of the estate be if you kind of add up everything, real estate and stocks and bonds and savings and cash and all of it?
Like about $5 million.
About $5 million. Okay. So here's what I would recommend. Do you have charitable interests? Do you have ministries or charities
that
are on your heart?
Charles Schwab told me I could create make them the trustees of whatever I leave behind. And depending on what I choose, they will be the trustees. So I don't have to choose a family member and that will squander it and, you know, whatever.
Yes, yes. Are there particular passions that you have, Carlos, that you would, if I were to say, what really gets you excited in terms of ministry activities? What type of ministries would you like to support?
Oh, my God. Wow. Ugh.
There may be a lot of things that really capture your heart. Here's what I would recommend as one alternative approach.
Moody Institute, and also I call myself ecumenical. Mm-hmm. There are so many different websites and people, and you know, either Catholic or Protestant, that they do so much good work. And actually for the poor.
Yes.
So, you know.
Let me make a recommendation. There's an organization that was founded by Ron Blue and Larry Burkett called the National Christian Foundation. And they're one of the largest charities in the world. But what they do, and they actually have an office there in Fort Lauderdale, and I believe they have one in Miami as well. They are all believers. And they will actually help you create what they call a giving strategy, where they will take you through a process at no cost to you to uncover your passions and see where those passions align with God's activity, both there in South Florida and around the world, and help you develop
a giving plan. You mentioned that Larry Burkett was the one that got me into the situation that I'm in, that I was able to manage my income.
Well, there you go. Well, Larry started the National Christian Foundation, and billions of dollars flow through NCF, the National Christian Foundation, every year into tens of thousands of Christian ministries. But the team at NCF can help you create a giving strategy and really come up with not only a plan for how you give it away, but also the actual ministries that it will be given to. And so we can do this. Either you can go to their website and contact them directly, or I would be happy to have my team get your information and we can have them contact you. Which would you prefer?
Please contact me.
Okay, great. So you hold the line, and we'll get your information, and we will get somebody in touch with you from the National Christian Foundation in South Florida, okay?
Thank you so much.
Very good. God bless you, Carlos. Thanks for calling today. Quickly to Chicago. Hey, Roland, how can I help you?
Hi. I am interested in paying off my house.
Okay.
But I'm waffling on whether I should. I've been advised by other friends that there's nothing seriously wrong with my idea. So I'm just bounce it off one more person to see if there
go
is.
Go for it.
Okay, I have 18,000 left on my house, and I have about 40,000 in my, let's call it emergency fund. It's just sitting there in a checking account.
Yep.
And if I pay off the house, that's $1,000 a month that I don't have to pay out, which lowers my amount that I need in my 3 month strategy.
Yes.
So what I want to do is grab 18,000 and pay off the house, and that's one more payment I don't have. And the
and
other
then you can,
payments I have.
Yes. And then you could take the money that you're saving because you don't have the mortgage payment and build the emergency fund back up, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, I love this plan, Roland. I think that's a great strategy. You know, here's the thing. When you get out of debt, there's just a whole lot of freedom that comes with that, peace of mind. You've got $40,000 in your emergency fund. You drop that down to $32,000, but then you could increase that by more than $1,000 a month to build it back up to the $40,000 or whatever you feel comfortable with. I'd recommend 3 to 6 months expenses. So I think there's not any reason why you shouldn't just go ahead and wipe it out, but then be really careful not to allow your monthly lifestyle spending to creep up and, you know, take advantage of that extra $1,000 a month or more. Make sure you get that going into that savings account until you get it replenished. I think you're on the right track, my friend. Thanks for checking with us. We're going to pause for a brief break, but we'll be back with more MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Thankful to have you along today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. Let's head to Austin, Texas. DJ, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. I'm not sure if you know about it or heard, but have you heard the tax forgiveness from IRS? Because I have these people calling me. I guess maybe I search online to see if I can do it, and some people calling me. So finally, I spoke with one person today, and he said, well, the tax forgiveness, he will give me a loan, and then he'll pay off IRS for me. Then I pay them off. So
no, yeah, I wouldn't go anywhere near that. If you're going to work, you would want to only work directly with the IRS, and it's called an offer and compromise that you would want to have representation. They are willing to work with you to, in some cases, reduce your tax liability if you're able to pay it in full or get you on a payment plan. But you don't want to go through a third party. The reason is that there is a lot of scams out there that are rampant. Basically, what they will do is they will tell you that they can get you to, they'll find a way for you to qualify for a government plan to settle your tax debt, but it's basically they're impersonating a government entity that's either the IRS or related to the IRS. They'll charge you typically a large upfront payment, and that's often equal to the amount of cash that you might list on an asset inventory if they have access to that. But essentially, they're just trying to scam you out of an upfront payment, and then you're never going to hear from them again. So I wouldn't go anywhere near this, DJ. Do you have back taxes that are owed?
Yes.
Okay. What do you owe? Do you know roughly?
About 27,000.
Okay. And do you have a CPA that you work with?
No.
Okay. What I would do is connect with a CPA or accountant, somebody who probably is what's called an enrolled agent. But the key is just that they have experience representing taxpayers before the IRS with what are called offers and compromises. And they should be able to get you set up on a payment plan that would fit into your budget, Or if you have a lump sum that you could do a payoff with, they may even be able to get that negotiated down. But you need somebody that can help you. You can do it yourself, but if you don't know what you're doing, and most people don't, it's nice to have somebody representing you before the IRS to help you navigate all of this. So I would connect with a CPA. If you don't have one, you could go to our website, moneywise.org, find a certified Kingdom advisor there in Austin, and ask for a referral to a godly CPA that you could connect with. They could probably help you, or they might connect you with another CPA who specializes in IRS representation. But that would really be the only direction I would go, DJ.
And not calling IRS directly.
You could. You certainly could. I just find in situations like this, it's going to be a little more effective to have somebody working for you who knows how to navigate the system, especially related to these offers and compromises, and can represent you. It's just, you know, it can be tough to do it on your own, but if you certainly want to start there, there's no problem with that. The IRS will work directly with you, but in my experience, having somebody represent you who's experienced in this particular area is helpful, okay?
Okay, thank you so much.
All right. God bless you, DJ. Tyrone in Muskegon, Michigan. Thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Yes, hi. How are you? Hey,
great,
my
thanks.
Question is, I'm trying to make it quick as possible. I have a friend. She's doing a quick, she want to do a quick claim, how you pronounce
yes.
it, on her home that she inherited with her sister. But it's so many complications. What if she just want to wipe her hands through because she on SSI? So she can't really outright sell it because the money that she get off the house won't be enough to cover her medical and all that, you know, through the years. And she just went through about a cancer. So she just wanted, you know, try to get rid of the headache and stress and all that. So she was planning on doing a quick claim to her two children, you know, like 25%, 25% of her question was, would she have any tax revocation on that? She owed about maybe $2,000 back taxes on it, but she planned on paying that off before she do the quick claim. That way it'd be free and clear.
Yeah. No, it would be considered a gift, and she'd have to file a gift tax notification to the IRS. So you're allowed to give away $16,000 per person per year. It's going up to $17,000 next year, and you don't even have to let the IRS know. If you go above that number, so let's say this happened next year, if it goes above $17,000 per person, that 25% share, then the rest of that would be considered a gift, and it would go against her lifetime gift exclusion, which starting next year is over $12 million throughout your lifetime. So as long as she doesn't plan to give away $12 million, then she's good. But she would have to notify the IRS of the value of that gift so they can apply it to her lifetime gift exclusion. But apart from that, there would be no tax ramifications.
Okay, cool.
All right.
Thank you very much.
So you're
going to
want to... Yeah, you're welcome. I would recommend that she connect with a real estate attorney there in Michigan, somebody who can help her think through just how to do this to make sure that it's done properly with the quitclaim deed and that it's filed with the county deed office properly and that this transfer happens the way that it needs to legally. So I think it would be really valuable, Tyrone, for her to have representation, and it would be a real estate attorney that you'd be looking for, okay?
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate that. They're going to help 100%.
All right. Absolutely. Thanks for your call today. God bless you. Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Dorothy, how can I help you?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
I have
an RRA, which I've had about 20 years. I did use it, some of it, for a car. But as of last month, it just worth $13,000. And I have it in a local bank. And I was wondering, should I take it out and put it somewhere it doesn't seem like it's drawing any interest? So that was my question.
Yeah, is this money that you don't intend to touch for a long time?
Yes, no, I don't want to touch it. I'm probably just leaving it for my children.
Okay. So I think the question is, how do you want to grow it? You could put it in CDs inside that IRA. As soon as you take it out, it's going to be added to your taxable income for the year.
Okay.
What is your age?
88.
Okay, and so are you taking a required minimum out each year?
Well, no. I haven't touched it for a while. I did have to get a car, $6,000, but
yes.
I haven't touched it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it is an IRA, correct?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Okay, you're going to need to... Sure. You're going to need to connect with a CPA to find out if you should have been taking out, starting at age 70 and a half, a certain amount each year based on the IRS's table. It's called a required minimum distribution. They make you take out based on your life expectancy and the balance of the account. You've got to take a certain amount out each year. And if you don't, there's penalties and interest on it. So you're going to want to connect with a CPA to find out how much of that needs to come out in order to satisfy that required minimum. Apart from that, you could either put it in CDs right there in the bank, or you could invest it maybe in a high-quality growth mutual fund, because you don't plan to touch it, so it could just grow until the Lord calls you home, and at that point, it could be in, then be distributed to your heirs. So I'd call your CPA or find one and ask about a required minimum distribution on your IRA, and then I'd decide, do you want to stay ultimately safe on the investments? If so, let's use CDs. If you're willing to take a little risk, I'd put the IRA money into a high-quality mutual fund, and our friends at soundmindinvesting.org can help you with that. Dorothy, thanks for your call. We'll be right back with more MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Well, we're thrilled you've joined us this morning for MoneyWise on American Family Radio, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. We're going to head back to the callers. We're taking financial questions on a variety of issues like spending plans, long-term savings, giving, and donor-advised funds. And next is Kenny. Thank you for calling, sir. How can I help?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I did freeze my credit. And I want to know, I was supposed to be in my minimum required distribution. I'm 71, and I just want to know to put it in. Could I take that out and put it in some type of other IRA so it could be tax-free?
Yeah, so the only way you can skip this being recognized as taxable income, Kenny, would be to take it out as a qualified charitable distribution. So this is essentially where it goes directly from the IRA to your church or a ministry, a not-for-profit organization. And then it's not added to your adjusted gross income for the year. It satisfies your required minimum, and it goes direct to that charity. Now, if you were already doing giving, let's say you're tithing out of your checking or savings account, you know, every week or every month, or you're giving a couple of times a year to a favorite ministry or charity, one option is you could make that gift from your IRA and then reclaim that money that you were going to send out of cash. And by doing so, you would effectively give the same amount to your church or a ministry that you were already planning this year, but at the same time, satisfy that RMD and not increase your taxable income one penny. So that's one strategy. The second would be you go ahead and take the distribution, you pay the tax, and as long as you have earned income, and that's going to be key, then you could turn around and contribute that to an individual retirement account, an IRA, but you would have to have earned income in order to be able to do that. That's taxable income and wages you get from working for someone else, for yourself, or a business, or a farm, something like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I got a pension from Southern Company, and also I get Social Security.
Okay. Yeah, neither of those would be earned income. You would have to get wages or salary, tips, bonuses, commission, that type of thing. So you would not be able to contribute to the IRA. But the qualified charitable distribution might be a great option to, in effect, replace giving you were already going to do with after-tax money and do it with this pre-tax money coming out of the IRA.
Okay, because I got so many other some money and a whole lot of other things, and I got that.
Don't need it, right? Is that the point?
Right.
Yeah. Yes. So when you don't need it, you know, a lot of times folks will say, well, why take the distribution? Well, it's just because the IRS says you have to based on the balance of your life expectancy. And that's where I think this qualified charitable distribution could be a great option for you. But apart from that, I think you just take it out, recognize it as income, and you could put it in savings or something like that.
So it's a charitable distribution.
Yeah. And you could either use it to increase the giving you're doing for the year, or you could just replace the existing giving you were planning on doing for the year. But instead of sending after-tax dollars already in your checking or savings account, you'd do it from your IRA. And that's a way to do the same giving without increasing your taxable income.
Okay, I got you.
Appreciate you calling, Kenny. God bless you, sir. And we'll hope to talk to you again real soon. Let's head to Missouri. Randy, thank you for your patience. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, thanks for taking the call. My wife is turning 62 in February, and in her company, they will disperse her retirement, but she's not quitting or retiring. They have what they call a quasi, and she has a new one that starts over. And we owe about $80,000 on our house, and she was wanting to know if it'd be wise to just go ahead and pay that off so we don't have that over the head, you know, over us for the next 5 years before we do retire.
Yeah. Are the assets in that 401k, Randy, that we're just talking about here, are they currently invested? Have they been in stocks and bonds this whole time? Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So naturally, you've seen some declines in that portfolio, correct?
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. So, I think the key here is, first of all, if you sense a real conviction from the Lord together as husband and wife that you all just need to get out of debt as soon as possible, I'd say do it and don't look back, and you probably won't regret it. If you want to be a little more tax efficient by doing it, you'd probably spread it out over a couple of tax years so you could, you know, take a half of the withdrawal in one tax year, half in another, so you're not pushing any portion of your income up into a higher tax bracket. I think the third consideration is, given that we've seen some declines, it's probably not an ideal time to be taking this money out. You'd probably, at the very least, want to wait for this to recover. Now, could we retest our lows? If in fact we haven't already seen the low, which he said there's probably 2 out of 3 chances that we haven't. So this could go lower, but the idea is we don't try to pick the bottom or the top, but you stay invested with this 401k until it fully recovers. Let's say that's a year from now, could be a little more, a little less. And at that point, then you start thinking about, okay, now we're going to take $80,000 of this $500,000, we're going to move it over to cash, and then on a tax-efficient basis, we're going to start pulling it out because we want to get out of debt, completely including the home. That makes some sense to me, but if you all don't have this kind of real strong conviction about being debt-free, at least from my perspective, I'd wait for the portfolio to recover before you take those distributions.
I understand totally.
Okay. Very good. Is that all you needed today?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Thanks for calling, Randy. God bless you. To Stillwater, Oklahoma. Judy, how can I help you?
Yes, I'm a victim of identity theft, so the IRS has told me by a 5-page letter. And I was wondering, what is my responsibilities? I kind of need some guidance here. Do I have to hire an attorney? I've already put a red flag on my checking account. I just don't know what procedures I should follow right now.
Yes. Did you say that the identity theft specifically came through the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. All right. And have you talked to their taxpayer protection department where they deal specifically with these types of issues?
My son and I are approaching that right now.
Okay. I think that's really the first thing, is to complete this form that's called an identity theft affidavit. And you would mail that to the IRS, and you'd receive a letter from them acknowledging that they've received this form. And your case is then assigned to what they call identity theft victim assistance, where it would be researched and resolved by an employee with a specialized identity theft training, and then they would work to resolve your case. So if you head to irs.gov, or you just Google IRS identity theft, you will find an article on how the IRS Identity Theft Victim Assistance Program works. And I think that's really what you need to follow. They'll tell you all the steps for you to take as a part of that and make sure that you are covered. You'll also want to talk to or follow the steps from the Federal Trade Commission at FTC.gov. There's some recommendations in that article on the IRS's website. You'll also find some information about how you can contact the Federal Trade Commission as well, just to let them know. And I think between the two, that should really get you going in the right direction.
Okay. Sounds like a lot of work.
Unfortunately, it is, Judy, and I hate that this has happened to you. I'm so sorry to hear you're dealing with this, but the good news is that this is not new, and there is a process for you to follow. I'm glad your son is going to walk alongside you in helping you to deal with this. So you just need to kind of follow the steps, know that it's going to take some time, but you can get past this, and we appreciate you calling today. God bless you. Deerfield, Illinois, Helen, how can I help you?
Yes, hi. Basically, very quickly, my husband and I have pretty set for retirement, like $1.3 million, and I have a pension that I'm pulling. And it's this life insurance, a term life insurance that's about $400,000 on my husband that we got 8 years ago. Right, we locked in at $177 a month. How long do we keep that? I mean, if we see he's going to work till 65. He's got 2.5 times his salary, which is... His salary is $160K. Do we need this life insurance, this term life insurance?
You really don't, Helen. Yeah. I mean, really, the only purpose for it is if one of you is counting on the other's income to be able to support, you know, yourselves during this season of life. And if you've built up the assets to be able to cover this, because either you're no longer working or you're soon not to be working. And if the Lord were to call one of you home, it wouldn't create any kind of hardship for the other spouse. Then there's not a need to pay a life insurance premium any longer, because essentially you've saved and done what you need to do to put yourselves in a position where you're no longer, you know, counting on an income from either of you. And you've got the assets and Social Security and retirement accounts to cover that. And so this is an expense we can drop during this season.
Okay. Yeah. We've had it so long. It just feels comfortable to keep it. But
I totally understand. Well, yes, it's a great opportunity for you to lower your expenses and put that money to use somewhere else. So that's really the key, I think, with life insurance. Thanks for calling today. We appreciate it. Barbara, you had a quick question on private mortgage insurance. Does it automatically go away when you get to 20% loan to equity? You would typically have to get an appraisal to prove that until it gets to 78%, and then it has to go away automatically. I would call your lender and find out the process to get that taken off. And again, it could require a home appraisal. Thanks for your question as well. Let me say thank you to my team today. Mr. Robert Sutherland providing some great research today. Devin Patrick, our engineer and producer. And Pat Montague handling our phones today. So delighted for your calls and your questions. Grateful to be along with you here on American Family Radio each morning. We're going to come back and do it all over tomorrow. I hope you'll join us then, and we'll look for you. May God bless you. Bye-bye.